Hello and welcome to NJ Biz Conversations. I'm your host, Jeff Kanige. My guest today is Anthony Anastasio. He is the president of the New Jersey Civil Justice Institute. That is a legal advocacy group for the business community. Anthony, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for taking the time. I appreciate it. You and I have spoken before about the judicial system in New Jersey, and we recently got, or the past few weeks anyway, got three reports that raise alarm about the costs to businesses imposed by court rulings and jury verdicts in the state. Two from the U.S. Chamber, I think the U.S. Chamber Foundation it was, and one from the American Tort Reform Association. The upshot is that New Jersey's court system is ranked among the most costly in the nation. First of all, is that a reasonable summary of what those three reports say? And second, does it dovetail with what you and your organization have experienced in your assessment about the state of things right now?
Yes. I mean, to put in perspective, I mean, generally, the American civil justice system is one of the most expensive in the world. For a variety of reasons. And, you know, these reports, specifically the U.S. Chamber's reports indicate that we're high on the list of U.S. states, as far as the costliest states in that system. Generally, our public policy favors private lawsuits as a way to resolve disputes. And, we have a lot of statutes that kind of impose things like fee shifting and punitive remedies that in practice often favor plaintiffs in those suits. You see this a lot in the consumer and employment laws. So, you know, what you end up with oftentimes is an imbalance that's created by those policies that creates economic incentives for plaintiffs' lawyers to pursue litigation. And, you know, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure this out. More litigation, you know, businesses are on the receiving end of it. It's going to increase costs. And, you know, ultimately those costs have to be absorbed somewhere. Oftentimes it's transferred to prices in goods and services. When you're dealing with litigation against local governments, higher taxes, and, you know, growth in those, tort costs, in nuclear verdicts, you know, that's outpaced inflation over the past 10 years. And just to be specific, those studies, the nuclear verdict study was one of them, analyzed nuclear verdicts between 2010 and 2019. And the tort cost study was specific to 2020.
Okay.
I think the reason why they did that was because the pandemic, you know, its effect on the court system kind of threw the data off. In the years that followed. But, you know, we're looking kind of at a snapshot of the past decade. And, you know, I think the, you know, the concern of the American Tort Reform Association's report was that, you know, some of the conditions on the ground in New Jersey may indicate a further increase as time goes on.
Okay. Yeah, that, I wanted to get to that in a minute. I wanted to start with the two chamber reports. You mentioned the nuclear verdicts. Those are large verdicts where in New Jersey ranked eighth in the nation in the frequency and number of those large verdicts. The other report cited had New Jersey ranked as the fourth most expensive tort system in the nation with an average cost of a little over $5,000 per household. You started to talk a little bit about, I wanted to get your takeaway on those specific numbers.
Sure.
And what they say to you.
I mean, the way the report characterizes tort costs, they're trying to kind of, you know, encompass, you know, everything from the cost of litigating and adjudicating claims, the compensation that's paid to injured parties, the amounts that businesses and individuals have to pay to transfer those costs to insurance companies, or if they're self-insured, to ensuring that their risk management is effective to you know, cover the cost. You know, it includes all different types of claims against businesses, including personal injury, consumer and employment claims. You know, it also takes into account auto and medical liability claims. So it's really kind of taking everything together, assessing it using, you know, basically publicly available information regarding premiums, you know, rate filings and insurance companies' costs, and using those to kind of extrapolate the total cost, you know, per household, and then also as a percentage of GDP. I believe we're tied for fourth with Delaware as far as its percentage of GDP. It's 2.68% of the state's GDP goes to these costs. And, you know, ultimately, you know, it's a reflection of a variety of kind of factors that, you know, you see in litigation. You know, one of the big costs in litigation, you know, across all different types of causes of action is the cost of discovery. You know, the way our state's standards for discovery, which is really just the exchange of information in lawsuits, it's kind of, it ends up being a fishing expedition. And, you know, maybe one of the ways to kind of, you know, limit those costs is to kind of go the route that the federal courts have gone, which is kind of limiting it. So it's, you know, the amount of discovery you can obtain and the type of discovery you can obtain is really proportional to your claims, relevant to your claims in the first instance. I mean, the other thing that we do is we allow private rights of action for all different types of claims, employment, consumer. And I think maybe a shift to more regulatory enforcement may help reduce those costs. Regulators don't have the same economic incentive structure as private attorneys do. So there's a variety of factors that kind of feed into this. We don't have any real limitations on non-economic damages, in particular in medical liability cases. There are attacks against private arbitration as a way to resolve disputes that's preserved under federal law, but there's been kind of a legislative onslaught to try to limit that. There's a kind of tendency to extend statute of limitations in our state. So, I mean, you have a variety of kind of factors that play into this in our state, and there's reforms, you know, some that I just mentioned that could be enacted to try to limit those costs in the aggregate and the impact on individual New Jersey citizens.
Okay. Yeah. And I'm going to give you a chance to talk in greater detail about those things. I just wanted to talk about some of the things that struck me about the list, for example, that New Jersey was on. I didn't see the whole list, but you know, we were ranked with states like New York, Florida, California, Georgia. Is this really a function? Those are all fairly large states. In New Jersey's case, a densely populated state, perhaps the most densely populated state in the country. Is this a factor of states that have active economies and are just sort of expensive in general because of the kinds of businesses that go on there? I mean, that's those, yeah, those states are you know, that's the economic engine of the country right there.
Right. I mean, really, every state is so different. It's hard to kind of create a baseline that runs between them. I mean, Florida, Georgia, you know, New Jersey, you know, it's like apples and oranges. But, you know, in some states you have elected judges and, you know, you have, you know, kind of, you know, the people who donate to their campaigns, their particular, view on liability ends up kind of permeating the judges' jurisprudence. Mm-hmm. Some states, like you said, are large, have active economies, but may have policies that kind of feed into litigation. I think our state kind of is more in that, you know, we have a large, vibrant economy, but we also have policies that we enact that kind of, you know, favor litigation, kind of generate litigation. So, I mean, there's a variety of factors depending on the state that could feed into this. I mean, I think New Jersey has a great judiciary. We have independent professional judges. I've litigated cases for years, and I can say nothing but good things about our judiciary. But the policies that we enact, you know, the laws that we put into place, you know, the judges have to, you know, apply the law as it's written. And oftentimes those laws kind of create the ability of plaintiffs to kind of leverage punitive remedies, fee shifting, to pursue litigation that, you know, may not otherwise have the, you know, economic incentive to pursue. So I, you know, it's a combination of factors depending on the state that you're in that could lead into this. A population, I don't necessarily know, is, you know, I think that's dispositive, but it could have, you know, obviously more economic activity, you're going to have more related liability. So that could be a factor.
Right. Okay. And the third report was from the American Tort Reform Foundation, which put New Jersey on its judicial hellhole watch, as they call it, which suggests that we're not quite there yet, but we may get there. And that really seemed to be what the flags that they were raising, that there were all three branches of government seemed to be heading in the same direction. What I hear you saying is sort of something similar.
Like I said, yeah, we have a strong judiciary. They're independent. They're appointed, not elected. Again, I think it really just feeds into the policies. You know, we've had a few laws that have been enacted in the past, year that kind of tend to, you know, foreshadow potential increase in liability, particularly in the auto space. There was a bill that didn't really have any legs last session that moved very quickly in lame duck in 2021 that expands liability of auto insurers on a very kind of mushy theory of liability for unreasonable denial or delay, which is, you know, pretty wide open. Typically, when you bring a claim against the carrier for bad faith, you know, they have to do something bad. This kind of makes it a lower hurdle. Basically, simple negligence on the part of a carrier could open you up, or breach of contract can open you up to effectively a bad faith claim with enhanced damages. So it's something like that is going to foster more litigation against carriers. You know, when you put economic incentives in place, there's bad actors in every area of society, but, you know, this kind of kind of pushes the scale and, you know, allows people to bring claims that under common law, they wouldn't really be authorized to bring. We've also increased the floor for mandatory minimums for auto insurance coverage. And, you know, ultimately that kind of increases the pot of money available on auto liability claims. And, right. you know, when you net moved through the legislature during budget, the only people who came out in support of it were the trial lawyers. Both the consumer advocates and the business community were opposed. So when you see these types of bills kind of moving down the pike, it's a cause for concern that the trend of an increase in cost is going to continue and maybe even spike further.
Okay. Now, just I want to look from the other side for just a moment. I mean, the reason we've got to this point is that there, in many cases, there's a victim, someone injured on the other side of this, and that in when it comes to choosing between either an innocent or injured victim and a company, a powerful company that probably has more resources, that the cost of making that victim whole should rest with the company. They're better in a position to deal with that risk. That's what the plaintiff's lawyers would say, I assume. Sure. I mean, I've spoken to them, a lot of them. So the question is, what do you do about that? I mean, is a costly system necessarily an unfair system?
I think if you just use an example of auto insurance, which we were just talking about, I mean, it really depends on how you view insurance. I mean, fundamentally, insurance is an asset protection regime.
Okay.
People with no assets who are trying to make everything pencil in their lives may decide, you know what, I need lower insurance. I don't have any assets to protect. If it's an underinsured or uninsured motorist on the other side, that's a particular type of coverage that you can purchase. If medical expenses are a concern, that's a particular, portion of your auto insurance policy that you can fine tune. But as far as, what you want to protect, you choose your coverage accordingly. The legislature's decided that people shouldn't be trusted with that decision, kind of bumped the floor, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, ultimately, if we're talking in that context about, insurance and what it is, from the traditional perspective, it's an asset protection regime. And in auto, I think the consumer should have the right to choose, how much of their assets they want to protect. If they have none, they shouldn't be forced to pay more. And those costs obviously are spread amongst mostly low and middle income consumers.
Okay.
Than they think they need to.
Okay. And another part of it is that in some cases, the other side, the plaintiff, if you will, is a company, another business. And I'm sure that they are probably pretty happy with the way the system works. If they get a recovery, a nuclear verdict or whatever it is, should all businesses be concerned about this, about the cost? Because they might one day be on the winning side of one of these things.
I mean, look, it's the best way I can, comparison I can make is it's like a lottery system in a lot of ways, the way it's kind of progressing into, if you hit big, you're happy about it. But, ultimately everybody else, we're paying for the ticket, so to speak, for that one person. So it is a decision that across, society, we have to make that decision whether it's worth it or not. But in a time of kind of rampant inflation, the question kind of begs the question for individuals, like, is this something we're willing to pay? Or when you look at other states, with lower tort costs, is the quality of life, worse? I mean, I think the answer to that is no.
Okay. All right. So you talked about a number of different things that you think might help. You mentioned regulations. You mentioned the quality of judiciary. I assume the appointed judiciary that we have now, you're okay with that. What are some of the things, though, that you think that should be done, that could be done right away to help alleviate some of these costs?
Like I said before, I think we have a high quality judiciary. We have a great Supreme Court. We have great appellate court judges. We have great trial court judges. They rise to the occasion time and time again, especially during the pandemic and especially in light of these judicial vacancies. They're still moving, everything down the pipe. So, I think it's more about policies, rules. Okay. That the legislature could enact, that the courts could enact through rulemaking. Like I said earlier, the cost of discovery for, businesses and litigation is astronomical. There are ways to retool the discovery rules to make them more focused so you don't have these fishing expeditions that cost millions of dollars in litigation.
Couldn't a judge do that now? I mean, isn't it? I mean, I'm trying to think back of litigation that I've covered over the years, and judges, it seems to me, they have some tools to rein.
They absolutely have control over discovery process, but the standard right now is very liberal. Okay. And the federal courts have kind of reined it in because it's just so out of control, and the cost associated with it is so out of control. They realize that it's not really leading to kind of adjust an efficient result. It's, you know, the discovery is almost driving the cost of that is driving kind of the end of, right. disposition to litigation. Some other things we can do is just kind of rethink using private rights of action in every piece of remedial legislation and kind of leaving it to regulators who have more sound discretion in picking the cases with truly bad actors. Rethinking fee shifting in certain cases, loser pays fees, limiting the ability to pursue claims when there's no actual harm. A lot of our consumer fraud laws allow plaintiffs to pursue litigation when really there's, very kind of questionable harm, preserving the right to private arbitration, limiting non-economic damages, which are very difficult to quantify and oftentimes lead to these outsized verdicts and nuclear verdicts.
Right. Non-economic these are all things, damages, reforms pain and that suffering, can kind of things feed like into that.
So lower cost right. disposition of cases.
Okay. All right. Before I let you go, I wanted to ask you about Governor Murphy's State of the State speech. We just heard that last week. A lot of the business leaders we talked to kind of liked the direction he set. I'm curious what your reaction was. Did you hear anything either that you didn't really like that much or that you thought was from your perspective and from that of your organization, of course? What did you think? What did you make of what he said and where you think he might be going? Did you hear anything that makes you optimistic?
The tone of it seemed to kind of bring things closer to the middle, and that's where my organization exists, middle of the road. And to the extent that things kind of go back to the middle, that's good news to me.
Okay, well, I ask that because that he is one of the branches of government that the American Tort Reform Foundation mentioned. So, and he's generally has been a favorite of plaintiffs' lawyers and environmentalists and things like that. Anthony Anastasio, president of the New Jersey Civil Justice Institute. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk to me today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Jeff. Thanks for having me, as always.
And thank you for watching. Until next time, stay safe, everyone.